59 minutes and 59. Pause recording. Button.
Hi, everyone. I'm not going to make this May Day Day 9. No, I'm not, actually. May Days. We may go out shopping later, so if we do, I might do it there or I might do something else. But I'm just going to do a Bunnell. I'm going to warn you in advance. This is about politics in general or in UK politics in particular. A lot of this was inspired by Claire Randall's and VI Podcasting's audio boo. And so if it's not interesting to you, then that's fine. Don't feel obligated to listen. But this is just our take on it. Now, I want to say, Jeff is going to speak here with me in a bit, but I want to say, first of all, we don't live in the UK, so personally, I don't know a lot about a lot of things. But I have a head on my shoulders and 2 ears in my head, and I hear and I hear things and I say what I think and how I feel. The reason why I feel that I have some, not authority, because again, I'm not living in the UK. I'm looking to study there, and who knows what the world might bring and life might bring, but I'm not any kind of authoritative person to speak about it, but I have been and am a politically aware person simply because of where I live, and I kind of thought it would be interesting for people to see, for people in the UK to see how this is perceived outside the UK. Also, we spent quite a bit of time in Scotland, and we will spend quite a bit more time in Scotland, and I have spoken to a lot of very, very politically aware Scots on a very personal level, meaning Scots who were active in the referendum and in the yes vote, more so than the no vote. So very disappointed Scots, or Scots that were very disappointed in September. And, you know, from Scotland, things look a bit different, and I haven't seen anyone from Scotland comment here on Audioboo. That's not to say that no one did. I haven't seen it. So I thought we would comment from a few points of view on Scotland and on how things look outside the UK. There are some things that Claire and Paul said that I agree with, some things that they said that I don't agree with, but this is something that has to do with, this is not a political, well, no, this statement that I'm going to make is not really political. It's not really about the vote itself, but it's about the mechanics of it. Claire says, Claire Randall says, Claire Randall says that she thinks, that she believes that voting should become compulsory. Now, I have a real issue with this. I live in a country where voting is not compulsory. And still, usually, between 80 and 100%, well, 80 and 90-something percent turn out for the vote. So, I think I think that voting should be encouraged. I believe that everybody should vote, but I believe that people should exercise the right not to vote if they don't want to. I don't believe that making voting compulsory is a democratic thing. I think it is not fair to make people vote if they don't want to. Jeff is here.
As a principle, I would agree with you, but there are some places where it would definitely improve things. For example,
It would improve things if everyone voted everywhere.
And the reason why is because if you take a place like the United States where voter turnout is relatively low, it's something like, I don't know, I know it at least has at least on some occasions been something like 40% of eligible voters, which is a very low number, I think.
Disgraceful.
And so when you have a small section of society voting like that, then the politicians, you know, as untrustworthy as they tend to be, will only ever pitch policies at the people that they know will vote.
But they don't know who's going to vote.
Yeah, they do. There's a lot of demographic studies into this. They could probably tell you quite accurately which groups of people are voting and which are not. It's their business to know this.
And now, so how come here it's around 90% the vote, 90-something percent, and it has never been compulsory?
Because it's a different mindset here. Australia is like the United States. Voting was not compulsory there initially. They had to have two goes to form the country, for heaven's sake. Because the first time, not enough people voted. And I'd only learned recently that Australia hasn't always had compulsory voting. Apparently it came in the 20s. So they can look at numbers before. And the number of people who voted obviously went up, and the policies that were presented had to take shift to that.
There are such problems with this because, I'm not being funny, but there are some people who are eligible to vote but don't vote because they really have no idea what's going on. And they don't care. That's the thing. They don't care.
Look, you can't force people to care about politics.
Right. So they may make very uninformed choices.
You can't require people to make informed choices either.
You can't require them to make any choice.
You can have people who enroll to vote and who are very definite about who they want to vote for and yet are making an uninformed choice. You can't make the burden of proof higher just because you think it's an argument for not doing something.
No, I think it's the right. I think we all should have the right to vote and the right not to vote.
Well, it's interesting. It would be interesting, and I don't know that this is necessarily the right venue for it, because 67% is a reasonably good turnout anyway. I think you would have to agree.
I don't know. Here it would be considered
horrible. Well, it was only 70-something at the last election.
It was actually very close to 80, to be fair.
I thought it was like 72 or something.
No. It was a lot closer to 80 last time. And it's been known to be in the 90s.
Oh, yeah, no, I would believe that. But
it was at 72% a couple of hours before, but then it got very close to 80, okay. If not.
Well, whatever it was. The thing is that there's a different societal attitude towards politics. It's something that everyone has an opinion on. It's a cultural thing, I think it is. In Australia and the US, there's a definite problem with getting people out to vote if they aren't required to at least think about it. In the UK, it sounds like it's somewhere in between.
I'm just saying that if people don't care, then they're just going to vote for whoever.
They can do that. That's their right. They can do that.
Then they have the right. Then it's just as
you can in Australia. In Australia, you have the right to go and make an informal vote that's not counted. If you really don't want to vote, go and scribble on something, or tick all the boxes, or write all politicians are a bunch of
whatever.
Insert expletive here. And your vote will not be counted. If you really don't want your vote to be counted, then you can do that. You have to, and that's one of the things. Yesterday I was talking about electoral reform and how there should be electronic voting. One of the things that I've always said about that is that as long as it remains legal to vote informally, then any new system, any electronic system, also has to allow you to vote informally. It should warn you that that's what you're going to do and that your vote will not be counted, but you should still be able to go ahead and do it if you want. Anyway, I think focusing on the voter turnout is ignoring the bigger problems.
But let's talk about the bigger problems.
So let's not dwell on this one.
I was listening to A Boo by Claire Randall and VI Podcasting, which, as always, is quite enlightening, and it was quite a tongue-in-cheek way of expressing things, but you could actually learn quite a bit from listening to their audio Boo. And there are some things that I said absolutely 100% right with you there, brothers. There are some things that really bothered me. The first thing I want to talk about is UKIP.
Mm-hmm.
And then I want to talk about the S&P. Now, I think you have to be very careful with people making illegitimate things sound legitimate.
You're trying to legitimize, yes.
Bigotry.
Yes.
Basically. To say, it's not that we don't want people here, it's just that we're worried about why people have to come here because their countries are not safe, so we should focus on helping them be safe in their own country, and make it look like you're actually really interested in helping them. I don't accept that. I'm sorry.
I think that the reason why they're say that they're interested in that is because they don't want to come to the UK.
Stay home.
And secondly, if you really are genuinely interested in improving the conditions UN. Well, not just that.
Don't go to UK politics. Go to the UN.
No, but if you are genuinely interested in the UK government improving the lot for other member states of the EU, then disengaging from Europe is not the way to do it. On the contrary, you have to engage with Europe. Say, we will get in there and help improve things in other European countries. And then, you know, if you actually went and did that, then there would be fewer people. People, as a person who's not living in my home country, I can tell you with some authority that all things being equal, people would prefer to live in their own country because it's where they feel that they belong.
Yeah, I can't relate to this because I've moved around so much. I'm not from anywhere, but I can totally understand it.
Yeah, people don't travel across borders in order to work, etc., etc., but for the hell of it, they do it because they can get paid more, they stand more chances of getting a job, and these are people that spent, and I'm not just talking about people in Europe, I'm talking about people from Mexico, go to the States, often illegally. I'm talking about people who travel from places like India to work in not just the UK, but here even. You know, people leave their families to go and get money from these places because they know, and their families know, that they can bring in much more money that way. And the only way that this is going to improve is to, you know, to help things at a systemic level there and not, for example, letting corporations use places like Mexico and India and probably some other Eastern Europe countries too, as a source of cheap labour.
I also would venture to say that most of the people who voted UKIP, because let's face it, they got quite a few votes.
Yeah, they got something like 3 million votes.
Is a problem.
Yes.
For me.
Yeah.
I would venture to say that most people couldn't give a rat's tushy about what happens in the countries.
No.
They just don't like the foreigners.
That's right. That's exactly what they are. And you have to call a spade a spade.
Exactly.
Sorry.
Don't make it look... It's like making the death penalty look like a medical procedure. You're killing somebody, at least be... have the balls to say, yes, this is what I'm doing. So if you don't like foreigners... Well, everybody knows it, so don't make it look like you really care about what happens in their home country, because you really don't.
And certainly if you want to disengage from Europe, then really you are washing your hands of all of that stuff.
Exactly, and that's what UKIP wants to do.
And also, if you take them at their word, which I'm not, obviously, but if you do take them at their word, then you're saying, on the one hand, we don't want Europe meddling in the UK, but on the other hand, you're saying
we want the UK
to meddle in Europe. Exactly.
Yeah, you can't.
It doesn't stand up, I'm sorry. Either way you slice it, it's just... Ugh.
Yeah, so I don't think... I don't know.
And the fact that their party leader didn't even get elected, I think, says a lot.
Well, now he's saying that he'll leave for now, and then he'll come back in a few months, and...
Look, maybe he could have chosen a better seat to stand in. If he got 3 million... If they got 3 million votes and he didn't get elected, then clearly he stood in the wrong electorate. You know, so... You know.
Now I want to talk. Let's talk about the SNP, because I think there might be a little bit of a
misunderstanding here about how the system works.
Not that we know more than the UK, but we more about the UK. But the thing is that
first of all, I'm very interested in voting systems and elections in general. And secondly, the House of Commons elections are run very similarly to how the House of Representatives system runs in Australia, with one distinct difference, and I'll come back to that. But it does mean that I know quite a bit about the system, because we use the same one.
Now, Claire said something which I have to agree, or at least agree with a variation of it.
Mm-hmm.
She said that... She called it... I don't know if she meant something that's similar to preferential voting, but she talked about proportional voting.
And a proportional voting is what more like what we have here, where you have like a list system.
Well, she said it was a better choice than what is now.
Well, we'll get... Do you want to talk about that now, or do you want to talk about S&P?
Well, we could... It's up to you, but I'm just saying that...
I'm just saying don't conflate the two because they're separate issues. So
okay.
Let's talk about one or the other.
So let's talk about the S&P then.
All right. So the thing about... There's a couple of things to talk about with the S&P. First of all, as much as people might want to, it's not the S&P's fault that the Conservatives got in. And the reason why it's not is because if the S&P had lost all the seats that they won, probably most of them would have gone to Labour, but they still would not have been enough. Even if every single seat that every other party won, apart from the Conservatives, went to Labour, they still wouldn't have had enough seats to pass 331, because they got 330. Conservatives got 331 seats, which was more than half the seats.
And there's no other way to slice that.
Exactly. There's no other way to slice that. So
the S&P didn't stuff anyone.
No. The only reason why anyone would have any reason to be mad at the S&P is if Labour had won enough seats that the SNP and Labour together would have had more than half. And if SNP had said that they would not go into a coalition with Labour, then you'd have some reason for complaint. As it is, all the parties together, apart from the Conservatives, didn't equal half the vote. So it doesn't matter how you slice it.
To be fair, Paul was saying that they would have formed a stronger, more credible coalition than Labour. Like, if the SNP seats were Labour, then...
Coalition with who?
Opposition or coalition. Or coalition. Either coalition, and which I don't think they would have sat with the Tories anyway.
No. The thing is that...
Or opposition.
The thing is that you're just talking about numbers. As it is, Labour got 230 seats or whatever it is that they got.
Yeah, that's not a strong opposition.
All their leadership and stuff, got elected. Ed Balls didn't get elected, but... The point is that, and he's in the UK,
okay,
he's in England anyway.
So they don't have balls.
Yes, I'm sure there are headlines saying that Labour don't have any balls. But but the thing is that you can still have an effective opposition. At the end of the day, the opposition is an opposition because it can't pass anything.
Mm.
You know, so the opposition is the opposition, and the strength of the opposition really comes from how well you make the case opposing what the government is doing, and that's about political performance. That's not about numbers in the House. The only time it would really matter is if the government was in some kind of coalition with some other party to form the government. So, say for example, if the Tories had ended up getting say 324 or 325 votes, then if all the other parties had banded together, they'd be able to stop something from passing. As it is, they have 331 seats. They have an absolute majority. They don't need to... They don't need anyone. Yes, they can run roughshod over the entire rest of the parliament, and there's nothing any of us can do about it.
Now, I will agree... Okay, so because we're talking about the SNP,
yep,
a bit of very recent history. Yes, Scotland voted no. But you have to remember that Scotland had just voted no, which means it wasn't an overwhelming number of Scots that said no to this. It was basically half, and not a lot more.
Yeah, it was like, officially it was 55% to 45%. There were some allegations of skullduggery. I don't know if they were fully investigated. But it was not a slam dunk by any means. The second thing that's worth knowing, and this refers back to Paul's comment about them, about Labour and such in Scotland. We were in Scotland for all of August and also on the day of the actual referendum itself and a couple of days leading up to it. And we were in a position to absorb some of the local media. And one thing that was really, really clear to me was that all of the running for the No campaign was coming out of London. Yes, there were local people on the scene and there were local figureheads and you had people like Alistair Darling and stuff, but the real push for the No campaign was coming from people like, Gordon Brown, who, even though is from Scotland, it's very much associated with, Downing Street and such, of course, having been Prime Minister Treasurer beforehand under the Blair government. And I think that the whole referendum process really, really damaged Scottish Labour as a brand, because I think, quite rightly, a lot of people saw the Scottish Labour Party as being at the beck and call of the English Labour Party, and there were reasons for doing this, but the thing is when you're voting for someone to represent you, it's a bit rough to think about, are you going to be voting for people who were teaming up with their English counterparts in order to defeat this referendum thing, and are they going to capitulate in a similar way and go along the lines with English Labour Party preferences when their personal convictions might be for something better in relation to Scotland. And the thing is really is that, as I say, yeah, the Scottish Labour Party, their brand was very much damaged by the referendum.
Also, they were promised some things by the Tories, I believe.
There were promises made and stuff, and I don't know how many of these things have actually been delivered.
Nothing.
And certainly, if people see the Labour Party as being a party that's not, the reason why the Scottish Labour Party, why the English Labour Party were so keen for Scottish Labour to be against,
because
it's the Labour Party, and as we have seen. The Labour Party, in order to keep their numbers good, need to win lots of seats in Scotland, and they didn't do that this time. I mean, yes, they wouldn't have overridden the Conservative vote on this particular occasion, but my understanding, I think, is 231 seats, and if they had the SNP 56 seats, then that would have taken them to a much more respectable-looking 287 seats. It's not enough to change the government, but it does make the Labour Party look better than it has done. And so, of course, if there was no Scotland in the union, then that's 50-odd seats that the Labour Party can't count on. And up until now, SNP has never won any more than 11 seats. So you can see why they wanted to, hang on to potentially 40 or 50 seats in the British Parliament. So they had a vested interest in saying no to the referendum.
Now,
and people saw that as being, I think at least, people saw that as being complicit with the English.
Well, of course it was.
And why wouldn't you think that?
You would think that, but and there's, and I think it's the referendum, the no vote won because of this. Because I think yes, they were scared, but I'll tell you why I think. They were scared. I think there was too much uncertainty. In other words, I think there weren't enough answers. What's
yes.
going to happen? It wasn't all laid out. They should have planned everything down to dotted the last I and crossed the last T before. Not this, we'll figure it out if we get independence. Mm. That's, I think, what made Scotland fail. Not because they really didn't want... They didn't want to be independent, but because there was too much uncertainty, and uncertainty scares people, which is fair enough.
The other thing you have to remember when thinking about the referendum in connection with this week's result is you have to keep in mind that people were asked to vote on two separate things. One, in the referendum, they were asking about whether Scotland should be its own independent country, separate from a union that they've been in for better or for worse for hundreds of years. But in this case, they are asking people to vote on who they felt could best represent their interests. It's a very different kind of vote. And if you've got one party saying, we are Scotland and we are going to put Scottish interests first, then in this current political climate, which saw the SNP's membership quadruple since the referendum, you can understand why they did so well.
Yeah, and this brings me to the next point. Scots didn't vote for the SNP to stick it to the English. They voted SNP because they thought that they would be represented in a better way.
Yeah, sure.
Better than Labour, who were tied to English Labour.
Mm, exactly. And if the promises that were made at referendum time have failed to deliver so far, and I have to admit that I haven't really been keeping an eye on it, but if they have failed to deliver, then that would give Scottish voters even more reason to be cynical.
I believe they haven't materialised, I believe.
So, the other thing that I want to focus on for this result is, and it's something that sounds like Claire touched on when she was talking about proportional representation, why did the numbers come out so far different from how the voters actually voted? Now, I don't know how many people have looked at this, but I was reading in a BBC News article last night, which I tried to find just now, but I couldn't find it. The figures of raw votes for the various parties, I can tell you that Conservatives got 36% of the vote, so just a little over a third. Labour Party got 30%. I think UKIP got 12%, I think. I can't remember the numbers for the rest. But for, as a matter of interest, I ran 36 and 30 through my calculator on a basis of a 650-seat House of Commons. You want to know the numbers? 36% comes out to 201 seats. 30% comes out to 195 seats. So it's a big difference between 201 seats and 331 seats.
So why did...
Well, the reason why this has happened, it's a combination of two things. First of all, the House of Commons elections has what's called a... what's actually called a Westminster-style government. And the way this works is that everyone has...
Oh, this is the first-past thing.
Well, no, we'll get to that. There's 650 members of the House of Commons, and each one of those people represents a geographical electorate. So these electorates are manipulated in order to try and have roughly the same number of people in them. But instead of having one big election, you're actually having a whole lot of little elections. So, for example, Paul would have been voting in one election, Claire would have been voting in another election, I'm not sure if Mel would have been in the same electorate as Claire Randall or not. It all depends on where the electoral boundary is. Certainly, people in Sheffield, where our other friend Claire is, would have voted in a different election.
And by equestrian.
Well, she may have, depending on where she is, she may or may not have been in the same one as Pauline. I'm not really sure.
She's in Manchester.
Okay, yeah. So it would be different again. So you have 650 geographical segments called electorates all over the United Kingdom. And so you have all these little elections. Now, so this means that the winner of each of those goes to the House of Commons. And so it's really a matter of how many of these little elections you can win as to how many people you can... as how many members you have in the Parliament. So, first of all, it's not necessarily proportional because you could have a whole lot of people from one party win a lot of seats. But say, for example, the results could be close in some of those and not so close in others. But as Nama said to me last night, even if you had 100% of the people in one electorate vote for someone and no one vote for anyone else, the end result is just the same as if someone wins it by
51%.
Now,
all the other votes get scrapped. They don't count.
Yeah, effectively they don't. The other thing that's worth noting is that, and this is the big difference between the lower house in the UK and the lower house in Australia, is that in the UK they have what's called first past the post. So say, for example, you have a party, you have an electorate with four candidates. You have a Conservative, you have a Labour, you have a UKIP and Greens. So, say, for example, for simplicity's sake...
Is the electorate of 10? Is that the 10 thing?
Yeah, like we were talking about yesterday.
They're making it very simple.
Yeah, so
say there were 10 people...
Well, let's not worry about the number of people. Let's just say give percentages. Let's just say, for argument's sake, that the Tories got 40%, Labour got 30%, the Greens got 20%, and UKIP got 10%. Now, a couple of things should stand out to you. First of all, the Tories would win because they had 40%, but it's less than 50%.
Yeah, most people didn't vote them.
Yeah, so the second thing that stands out to you is that the other three parties in combination had 60% of the vote, but none of them won.
And they don't... Not only didn't they win, they didn't count.
Well, they don't count in the end of it. I mean, they count in terms of thing, but And so
they don't count in terms of who goes to the parliament.
No, I mean they count in that they count in terms of determining the result, but that's it. So if you had a poll like that in an electorate in the UK, then that would be the end of it. The Tory gets 40%, that's ahead of everybody else, they win, they're off to the House of Commons. In Australia, that would not be the end of it, because no one has managed to get 50% plus one vote.
Absolutely.
No one's managed to get an absolute majority. Now, if for example, the Tory candidate had gotten 52% or
then it would be
60% or 67%, then that would be the end of it. They would say, well, this person has got more than half the votes.
This person goes off to
this
the
person
parliament.
Goes off to the parliament. But that's not what happens in Australia. If a person going to Australia, I'm going to use the same party name just for simplicity, even though you don't have UKIP and,
it doesn't matter.
And so on in Australia. But same. There are parties with similar ideologies, so we can just use the same names. Person voting in the UK would just mark the box for Tory or UKIP or whoever they're voting for, and that would be it. In Australia, what you're required to do is to number each one in order of preference. So, for example, a person might say, OK, I'll put one in the box next to Labour, two in the box for Greens, three in the box for the Tories, and four in the box for UKIP or something like that. And so what would happen under this situation, if the Tories got 40%, Labour got 30, Greens got 20, and UKIP got 10, they would say, right, no one got a majority, so now we have to start distributing preferences. And so what they would do is they would say, okay, UKIP is coming last, they can't win this, let's remove them from the count. And so they would remove UKIP from the count, and then they would say, let's look at the second preferences for all the people who voted UKIP, and add them to the other parties. And so, say, for example, if 70% of the UKIP voters voted Tory and 20% of the UKIP voters voted Labour and 10% voted Greens. So
it does mean that Tories would get more votes.
Yeah, it means the Tories now have gone up to 47 because that's 70% of 10. And Labour would go up to 32, and the Greens would go up to 21. The Tories still don't have a majority.
So we go
and so then
round.
You would take the Greens out, and you'd say, OK, let's distribute their second preferences. And you keep on going with this stuff until...
And most likely Tory would win.
Most likely the Tories would win, but if you do get to the Greens, you might find quite a lot of the Greens voters voted Labour.
Ah.
So maybe, say for example, if 70% or 80%, let's say 80% of voted them put Labour second,
then
that would be very interesting, because then Labour would go from 32% up to 48%, because 80% of 20 is 16, so that gets you to 48%. And say, for example, only 10% of... Or, you know, even if 10% of Greens voters put Tories second, then they would get to 50% and they would pass. But it gives
very
you...
different,
it's
though.
A very interesting idea, and it works. I've seen this in practice. We went to... I had a school trip to Canberra, and one of the places we went to was the Electoral Commission. They actually held a ballot. We had to vote which band we wanted to come and play at the school, and we had four to choose from, and we enlisted them in preferences.
In order of preference.
And they did the count in front of us, explaining how it all worked. And it meant that, I mean, this was all hypothetical, of course, but everyone was satisfied with the outcome because you could see the process. And you could see that it was
counted.
Fair.
That's the thing.
Yeah, the votes were counted.
The votes were not thrown out.
Mm.
Now, can we quickly touch
on
proportion?
So... that's one way of handling it. Now, it would be interesting to look at raw figures and maybe some demographics to try and determine whether the result would have been substantially different.
It would have still probably been a similar result.
Well, it all really depends. If you have some seats, if you have some seats where Labour, for example, only narrowly lost, then preference and the Tories still didn't get an absolute majority. Preferences could really have made a really big difference. Maybe not. It all really depends. But and obviously people, because it's such a skewed result from raw voter numbers, people will be looking at this. It will be very interesting. There's an election analyst in Australia that the ABC has working for them, who writes very interesting articles about elections, and I'm very interested to see what he writes about this one. And certainly if he does, I'll be sharing it, because I'm sure it will be insightful, as it always is. So, but even with this system of electorates and preferential voting, you can still get weird things happen. For example, I was just telling Nama about how in 1996 the Conservative Party in Australia, which is perhaps ironically called the Liberal Party...
Which it isn't.
Which, well, it's about, you know, liberal, like economic liberalism, like
yeah,
less
it's
government
it's very
stuff.
Misleading.
It's different. It's a Conservative Party. There's no way of slicing that. When people are wanting to talk about people who are actually liberal as opposed to these people, they say small L liberals. But anyway.
Yeah.
The Liberal Party came to power in 1996 after having been out of power for 13 years and including losing the 1993 election, which everyone said they really ought to have won, and they really ought to have won it. They screwed it up and lost it. And so you would have thought that a party like that would be set to govern for some time, and they actually did govern for 11 years. But at the first election after, which was in late 1998, some 2.5 years after they took power, they almost lost it. And in fact, looking at raw voter numbers, the Labor Party actually got more votes. But because of... And this is with preferences even, but because of the electorate system, this isn't how it works. Now, so what is meant by saying a proportional representation is that you just have people...
A little bit like here.
Yeah, a bit like here. You have... What happens here is that you have all
there's
these
no
parties...
Electorates.
You have... Yeah, there's no electorates. You have all these parties, and each party has used a primary or something like that to do... Because what happens in the UK is that whether or not an individual gets in is solely based on whether people have elected them. And so, for example, if I'm the member for, I don't know, Western Supermare or whatever, then I have to convince the people who live in my electorate that I'm worth voting for, and if they vote me in, I get in, and if they don't, I don't, and that's the end of it. And so, in a sense, people have elected every member of Parliament. However, for example, you can only vote for the person standing in your electorate. You
that's
can't vote for... If you say, well, I can't stand... David Cameron or Ed Miliband, so I'm not going to vote for him. You don't get to choose who you vote for. And I suppose in proportional representation, you kind of don't either. But what happens with proportional representation is that there's...
You vote for a person, you vote for a party.
You vote for a party. And so there's usually been some kind of mechanism to determine who will appear on the party list. And often this is conducted through some kind of primary, but it doesn't have to be.
Yes.
It depends on... Are they required to hold primaries here?
Well, they have to have elections within the party.
Right, so they do have to have elections.
In the... But...
Yeah. So people who are members of the party can choose to vote for who appears on the party list.
That's how they do it.
And so what happens with that then is that the election is held, and based on the percentage of votes that people get, that determines how many seats they get in Parliament. So, for example, it would mean that a party that gets 50% of the votes will get roughly 50% of the seats. Now, there are some complicating factors that I won't bore you with.
No, it's too complicated.
In that there is, someone who gets 2% of the votes won't get 2% of the seats. And that can mean some weird things with numbers in the end of it because you have percentages left over. But that's basically how it's going to work.
Because you can't just get into... There's only 120 seats and... If you don't have... You have to get a certain number of votes to even get into Parliament.
Yes, and it's more than a vote for one seat.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're trying to get rid of one-member parties and stuff like that, but it does mean some odd things happen sometimes. And people are saying that this needs work here, too. And part of the reason why it does is because of the number... Too many parties. But I actually think that you may run into bigger problems in the UK as well. Let me return to the voter numbers that we had for this election. 36% of people voted Labour, voted Tory, and 30% voted Labour. That only comes to 66%. In other words, two-thirds of people voted someone other than Tory or Labour, which means that, yes, you could have proportional representation, and end up in a situation where the numbers of people in Parliament more accurately reflect the people's vote. And so the Tories would have got their 201 seats and Labour would have got their 195 seats. But think about it this way. It means that your governments nearly always have to be coalition because it's very difficult for one party in a multi-party system to get more than 50% of the vote. You know, Labour, you know, the Tories only got 36%. You know, if you add to them the UKIP votes, their 12% or whatever it was, that's 48. That's getting close. How would you like the idea of a Tory and UKIP and maybe one or two independents or something being coalition being your government?
Some people would like it very much.
Some people would like it, but it would be kind of weird because the Tories would then have to give some concessions to UKIP, who are further right, in order to get their support. And this is exactly what has happened here in Israel.
Oh, my goodness.
And in fact, this is quite topical here, actually, because this was only finalised this week, even though we had our elections on the 17th of March. The Likud Party, which is Benjamin Netanyahu's
party. Which is the equivalent of the Tories.
Which is the equivalent of the Tories, politically speaking, has, won the election by several seats. They got 31, I think it was, seats out of the 120-seat Knesset. But there, again, it's only a quarter of the House. And they ended up having to negotiate with a bunch of parties to make up a ruling coalition. A couple of parties withdrew and said that they weren't going to do it. And so he ended up in the position where he was likely to form a coalition with the religious parties that were further to the right of him, but he had to get them on board because you added up the seats that they got along with his party and it only just comes out to enough. And so he had to get them all on board, you know, no matter what. And so that meant that Likud ended up giving away a lot of concessions and giving a lot of ministries to these two religious parties,
Jewish Home and the Shas parties. Making even their voters very unhappy, even their own voters.
Yeah, exactly. The people who really won out are the people who voted Jewish Home and voted Shas, and yet both parties got less than 10% of the vote
each.
That's
disgusting.
And so you run into other problems here. So it is difficult. You would say on the face of it the proportional representation is fair, but I don't know whether it is, because you end up with weird-looking governments with proportional representation.
And they can't be... This is what we've had... I don't see any difference between this government and the previous one, except that this is worse.
Oh, this one is worse. Yes, it's definitely
worse.
But
it's not moving in any kind of other direction, even though you feel... You know, this is something I've been wanting to say. Mm. Something that I've been hearing from... Basically, each and every one of my UK friends, or that they've been hearing, I have heard, I don't know the number of times I've heard since the election, I don't understand how the Tories won. I don't know a single person who voted for them.
Mm.
And so this is how you... I don't know a lot of people who voted that far right either.
Mm. And the thing is that you do end up with a parliament that represents more or less the numbers of people that voted, but you don't necessarily end up with a parliament or at least a government, that represents,
a parliament, yes,
that represents the will of the voters.
Exactly.
And the other thing is, and particularly coming from a country where there has been preferential voting, is that there doesn't seem to be any room in the list system for a preferential vote. And that is a bit of a problem. And I don't know quite how to... Because then you get people saying, well, I've only got one vote, so I really would like to vote for so-and-so, but I think that I should vote for so-and-so else because I think they will, you know, that it's, you know, going to be a more worthwhile vote. And,
yeah,
and then people undermine what they are trying to do.
And
because
here I'm mad at the people who didn't really vote for who they wanted to because they thought that if they voted Labour, for example, yes, we have a Labour Party, they would have basically thrown out the equivalent of the Tories, but they didn't.
No, they didn't. And if they'd actually voted some of the smaller parties, then some of these smaller parties would have been in a better position to be coalition partners. And that's the thing. And the other thing that people haven't talked much about is...
Do you know how long we have left? Let me just check.
Speech on.
Time remaining. 15 minutes. Oh, yeah, we have 15 minutes.
Okay, the other thing that people haven't really talked too much about, as far as I can see, and I'd actually like to read up on this, there were 331 seats went to the Tories, 230 or something went to Labour, 8, I think it was, went to Lib Dems, 56 went to SNP, 1 went to the Greens, 1 went to UKIP, I think it was 3 went to...
Independent.
Plaid Cymru, I think that's how you pronounce it, the worst party.
French. Welsh.
The worst party. And 19 seats went to other parties. 19.
That's more than Lib Dems got.
That's more than Lib Dems, UKIP, Greens, and Plaid Cymru put together got. Who are these people? Who are these other parties? What are their political leanings? Under a proportional representation system, these other groups would be crucial because these small parties might be enough summed together to form a government. Mm. So think about that one. I think it's good when you're talking about systems of governments and systems of voting to think about the problems that these will solve, and I definitely encourage that, but also... have a think about the problems you might be causing. It is very difficult, I think, to try and come up with an election system that fully reflects the will of the people. And trying to quantify the will of the people is part of the problem, I think. It would be interesting to go to a country where there is preferential voting, somewhere like Australia.
What other countries have that? What about New Zealand? What do they have?
New Zealand has a really weird system that I don't really understand.
Okay, so it's not...
They have a system... Well, I mean, I think they might argue... I mean, they have to have coalition governments too.
So which other countries...
They have a system where... An interesting thing about their system, and I'd like to read up on it more, is that they have a system where you can vote for the party and also vote for your local member.
Oh.
And so some seats have... It's like a combination... It's like a hybrid of proportional representation.
Well, you know, we had one election in the 90s that you got to put two notes in.
Yeah.
One for the party and one for the prime minister.
Interesting.
But that didn't work.
Didn't work?
They did it only once.
And what happened? Which election was that one?
In the 90s. I don't remember if it was 96 or...
Oh, that was the first Netanyahu election.
Either 99... I think it might have been 99 then.
Oh, that was when Barack... When Labour, when Barack won.
I don't remember.
You could end up in a situation where you have a president who runs a minority government.
Prime minister.
A prime minister, I should say.
That's happened in the US, by the way. That's a US problem that could happen.
Oh, yeah, of course. You could definitely... Well, it's a problem right now. The Democrat Party doesn't control either the House of Representatives or the Senate.
It didn't happen here because the...
It can't.
As it turned out, the person, because the thing is that it was still the leader of the, but the thing is that this solved a problem for the smaller parties who wanted to have an effect on who the prime minister would be. It's a little bit like a preferential, but not, because they know that their leader is never going to be prime minister.
Right.
So you could still vote.
Yes, you could
Greens,
vote.
Greens, I voted. I voted in that election, so I voted Meretz, which is like your equivalent of Lib Dems. But
what they should be.
But,
not what they are now.
Like, really left.
Yes.
And I voted for the person who happened to be the head of the Labour Party.
Yes, who was Ehud Barak.
Who was going to be, I don't remember if it was that one or the Paris one.
All right.
But I remember voting for the party, and then people felt better about voting for the smaller parties because they could still.
And that's probably why it was never repeated, because the smaller parties got more votes.
They did.
Yeah, and of course the people who determine these things are the bigger parties, the governments. And this is what they're saying now, is that whilst this arrangement will put out, make a very strong case for a change in the system, it's quite possible that Parliament, looking the way it is not likely to pass such a change. Because the people who hold the most power, i.e. the Conservatives, will say, well, we won this election, why should we change the system?
Well, yeah.
Exactly.
Anyway, if you've listened so far, good on you.
I really enjoy discussing elections and such in particular. If people wish to engage with me on the subject, feel free to do so. You can either send me a DM or put comments on this boo or comments on the boo that I did yesterday about voting systems. Feel free, because I can talk all day about this stuff. I find it interesting.
It is great. It's great stuff. Anyway, thanks for listening. Thanks to Claire and Paul for opening this discussion. To other people, you know, chin up. Hopefully, you'll manage to change it next time.
Yes, and if we things go the way we want, then we'll be in the same boat as the rest of you in the UK in a few months' time.
Yes, if the UK doesn't throw us out.
Yeah, well, they don't. Fortunately, they aren't in position to.
Yeah.
Anyway.
All right, well, thanks for listening, and we'll talk soon. I'll let Jeff title this boo, because I don't even have an idea.
Oh, and just one final thought. Those of you interested in how the referendum in particular has shaped the Scottish political landscape may want to keep an eye out for the Scottish parliamentary elections.
That's coming next year.
That's when I think you'll see a result that more closely reflects the outcome of the referendum.
Bye.
Bye.
Speech on. Pause recording. Button.